Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today my guest is a very interesting writer. His name is Matthew McIntosh. He's written a novel called The Mystery Dot Doc. It's published by Grove Press. It's, in a way, part of the grand history of Grove Press to publish singular books. Grove Press, once upon a time, first published Genet in America. They published our own Los Angeles's Cubby Selby, Hubert Selby Jr.'s Last Exit to Brooklyn. They published Dennis Cooper. And now they've published The Mystery Dot Doc. What's singular about the book is immediate. The first thing you notice, it's 1,600 pages long. And when people refer to a book as a doorstop or a brick, they're usually not right. In this case, they are right. Like Tristram Shandy, the book has blank pages. The book has pages filled by a single letter. The book is asking us to reconsider what a book is. But really, it's asking the impossible question. How can a book be like life? Life is so various. Life is so incoherent. Life has so many aspects that don't fit together. So the book is trying to find a way to represent the interaction of consciousness with the events of life. And would you say that that's a fair description?
Yeah, I wish you'd written my copy for the cover. That'd be really beautiful. I like it.
And this book follows a much shorter book, a novel called Well. Well was also published by Grove, but was published 11 years ago.
14 now.
14
2003.
Now. Wow. And so The Mystery Dot Doc really represents a commitment of time and labor, and much of what the book discusses as a book, when the book talks to you in its different voices, it's telling you how hard it was to write. Mm-hmm. It's as if the book is speaking about the condition of being a book in a contemporary time, when no one is reading, when no one knows what a story necessarily is, when everything is breaking down, and on top of it, the deepest level of mystery in the book is, what is a human being at a time when the most popular question we get asked on the web is, are you a robot?
Mm-hmm.
So the Turing question, what is human? How did this book come to enter your consciousness?
Well, through a long, long period of time, and it's changed from the beginning to its current state now. It was always, I went into it with the intention of writing something good, something great, but not knowing exactly how to do that. Not knowing what it would be. And so I sort of gave myself to the book and to the process and said that whatever it's going to be, it's going to be, and I'm going to try to facilitate that, which meant for me sort of removing distractions from my life, going off. My wife and I moved to a place where we didn't really know anyone. And basically I sat in my basement and worked on the book for about 13 years.
And you were not otherwise working during this time?
No, luckily I didn't have to work because my wife basically took care of everything. She kept a roof over my head and clothes on my body.
You're so lucky.
Yeah, I know. I'm very, very lucky.
Now, many books that I've read in the past that are called experimental, the writer knows exactly what the experiment right. is right. and where it will end up. Hmm. I think Joyce knew from the beginning that late at night, Molly Bloom, mm-hmm. in the novel Ulysses, mm-hmm. would have a monologue in which she would say yes. Mm-hmm. He always knew it. When you're reading the mystery dot doc, you as a reader are as surprised as the writer is by what comes next.
And I think a lot of that is because during the writing of the book, life happened and things were happening in life that were surprising. I never thought that I was actually going to be a part of the book. I was looking towards other people to tell stories. I wanted to find what life was like for them. And before I knew it, I was sort of pulled into the book. Certain things in life happened that became part of the work I was writing.
Well, now, the first thing I noticed as I was reading the mystery dot doc, there's a prologue, kind of. And I was reading the prologue, and I wasn't sure what it was until I happened to realize that it was saying the same thing three times in three different ways. I thought about it and thought about it because it refers to the Lord, but it's the Lord Don Quixote.
Thou, O knight, right?
Yes, the knight. And he has been translated many times, mm-hmm. most recently by a writer who won a book award for her translation, Edith Grossman.
And I actually wrote her before the book came out and asked her permission to use her version. And she was really gracious and allowed it. So it was nice to be able to talk to her.
Two other versions follow. And what's more, Don Quixote has been illustrated by all sorts of illustrators. For instance, Doré. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
I didn't have his email address, so I wasn't.
But still, our knowledge that a story, the same story, is told many times in many different ways.
The section that you're referring to is the section towards the end of the first book of Don Quixote, where he's being brought back after his adventures. And I can't remember if it's the barber he's talking to or a goatherd, but he's having an argument about the purpose of books of chivalry and books. And there's the people who are taking him back are saying, these are ruining your mind, these are destroying you. And he gives this argument. He says, no, what is more beautiful than this, right? And he's about to describe such an amazing thing that occurs in literature. But he says, and this is where the quote begins, he says, what is more beautiful than to see before our very eyes this minute, I'm paraphrasing, a boiling lake of pitch and swarming around in it all sorts of gross and disgusting and writhing and scary and freaky monsters. That's how it begins. And then he says, and then to hear a voice, a still voice from inside the lake of pitch, crying out to the night, saying, thou, O night, and essentially saying, if you show the bravery of your heart, jump into this seething flood and into this fire, into this flame, and whatever else is essentially into destruction, because if you don't, you will not be worthy, she says, to see the amazing things that exist in this land below. And then he describes jumping in and seeing a castle and being led into a castle.
Well, I'm talking to Matthew McIntosh about his book, The Mystery Dot Doc. And I read that opening section, this call three times over, as a call to the writer and to the reader to jump into
Absolutely.
The burning pitch.
Absolutely.
And that what happens to us there is either going to purify us or kill us.
Right.
We, like Quixote, are traveling through a world where, for Quixote, the chivalric values of rescuing a maiden, of defending the world have vanished. And in the mystery.doc, the author is looking for a form of purity that will not just rescue him, but rescue the world. Mm. This is a book that really has the future of the world in its craw. Now, many of our greatest writers, including Auden, have feared that art does nothing, that it can't, that it can be great, but it doesn't have saving the world in its bag of gifts. What do you think?
It can transform the writer. It can transform the reader. The one that calls to mind, because it was really helpful for me at the beginning of this book, is the Gita, which I think is one of the most beautiful and just wonderful and most true books ever written.
Tell the listeners what the Gita is.
The Gita is a Hindu text written, I believe,
The
Bhagavad Gita, written about 500 BC or something like that. It essentially describes something called the Karma Yoga. There's a story involved, but basically the story that is a background to the philosophy in the book about a war and Krishna talking to I think his name is Arjuna, mm-hmm. Who's afraid of going into battle. And essentially the philosophy that he delivers is a philosophy of the Karma Yoga, which is to perform all actions selflessly and as a sacrifice to the greater power that animates and creates the world.
You use the wonderful translation, I think, by Wendy Doniger.
Yeah, well, yeah. For the Vedas, there are some from the Vedas.
And other books that come up in the course, of course, Dante's Divine Comedy, mm-hmm. of course, Homer's Odyssey, mm-hmm. and Joyce's Ulysses.
Those are all touchstones and fairy godparents, I think, for this book.
Now, did you tremble? Because you were talking about some of the greatest works of world literature, and you were taking them on with no irony.
No.
This was, you know, I am meeting the greatest with my very best.
Right. I think it goes back to the Karma Yoga. If you win, you win for and under the direction of that power. If you lose, you'd lose for and under the direction of that power too. So the book is, one of the things that the book is really about is striving. And it's about trying to create and trying to make the most out of your life, to make the most out of your gifts, to make the most out of, you know, your time on earth. And I didn't tremble. Well, I did tremble. I trembled quite a lot, I should say.
Actually. I would tremble.
I trembled all the time.
Yeah.
It was a heavy experience writing this book.
You will know what this book is about by the time you finish it. Yeah. But you may not know while you're reading it. Right. So it, too, is putting you, the reader, to the test, putting you in the boiling lake of pitch where you may meet monsters who will send you forth to the castle.
It's asking you to dive into it. It's asking you to put your fear aside, put everything aside, and jump into it.
Now, reading, I didn't always know who the characters were. Mm-hmm. And just as the book begins with three translations of Don Quixote, I began to find that there were different versions of the characters. Boiled down, they're the same character,
right.
But they're different aspects. Sometimes that aspect can be realism mm-hmm. at the center, comedy mm-hmm. on the left, mm-hmm. and tragedy on the right.
Right.
And as a realistic character, well, the character's name does happen to be Matthew McIntosh, but when we first meet him, we meet him as Dan. And not only do we meet him as Dan, Dan's favorite apple is a McIntosh. So free association. has a lot to do with this
book. Now, that part where we actually did plant a Macintosh in front of our house, and it was in honor of my father, who had just recently passed away. And the conversation you're referring to is actually a verbatim transcript of a conversation that I had on the porch with a door-to-door Jehovah's Witness woman one day.
So the consciousness of fiction, which takes us usually from beginning to ending, this book is more real than that. It takes us from beginning to accident, to free association, to interruption, to juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. It's all here together, while the author is hoping that all of this three-ring circus will come to something happening in the center ring of the main tent.
The it's a good way of putting it.
Thank you.
The intention behind the book, and this became more and more clear to me even as I was writing it, is that the intention of the book is to discover that thing that is holding it all together, that is holding the book together, that is holding us all together. And all these things that you say, you move through a crowd and you don't know that person, you don't know that person, you don't know, and there you know that person. And these connections that we have, that some of them we're not aware of, some of them we are aware of, exist in relation to a center point, and it's that center point that was always the thing I was trying to reach.
My name is Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Matthew McIntosh about his new book, The Mystery Dot Doc, published by Grove Press. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Matthew McIntosh about his book, The Mystery Dot Doc, an epic page-turning novel that explores how even forgotten memories give meaning to life. I think that this book, now everyone take a breath and hold it, this book believes in salvation. This book wants the salvation of its characters, of its author, that the salvation in it is more or less Christian, and that it believes that there is a goal, and that what has obscured the goal is the enemy. The enemy might once have been called the devil, but the enemy is now the enemy of constantly rivaling texts that are canceling each other out, that are causing themselves to self-edit. There are a lot of black lines through the text, throughout the book, and they were put there by the enemy, it seems to me, who wants the ultimate goal of the book to be obscured. So the book has a dramatic tension. It's the war with the enemy to make its belief, its goal, clear. When I say Christian, I don't mean conventionally Christian. I mean spiritually Christian, because obviously if you have a book that's coming from the Bhagavad Gita, we're talking about global spirituality. But nevertheless, we're dealing with an American family whose father, Mike, is a pastor. He passes away and leaves, in some sense, his spiritual reach to his son, Matthew, who presumably faces me right now. This is not metafiction. This is a quest novel. in which the novel Matthew is facing death and life in order to come out the other end carrying something meaningful, that is to say, carrying the mystery. The mystery is being carried aloft in triumph over the enemy who wants the mystery to be obscure. The mystery is obscured in life in all kinds of ways. Pardon me for putting you on the spot, but what are some of them?
I think the one mystery that's obscured is that sort of the, well, let's just say God. God is a mystery that is obscured because he's fallen out of fashion. The idea that there even is something to look for, the idea that there even is a mystery has fallen out of fashion. Not only fashion, but it's become, even the idea is engendered hostility toward it.
Yes. Now, will you talk to me directly about salvation?
Sure, let's do it.
Please.
Well, we were talking about Quixote and the magical castle that exists. If a person has the will to dive in, if a reader will stay with the book and then they'll give themselves to the book in a sense, that they'll find, I'm not going to say they're going to find salvation in my book, but they're going to find an idea in it that's there towards the last pages. That might be on point there.
I found, as I was reading the very last pages of the book, after the book has officially ended, everything that we've been told as truth is now rewritten with an is not instead of an is. And I found myself crying because I recognized that truth and its opposite in this book bear a standard of equality. They're both important. And it's not until, in a sense, you come around the corner from the absolute to the unsure, to the illusionary, to the potentially lost, that you're really entering the frame of this book. Just as all three of these translations are right, so the right and the wrong in this book, all three versions of each of the characters, all three versions that each of those characters have of death, they are struggling with something that is trying to be absolute and failing, as the author is trying to teach the reader to accept everything, go along with it, go with the flow, be a part of. And this is so different from what we take a novel to be. Now, if I have managed to make the sound very interesting to you, then you're my kind of reader, and you go and you find the mystery dot doc by my guest Matthew McIntosh, who's been concerning me. I've been speaking to him on the telephone, and his dismay, really despair, that this book isn't being found. Now tell me, is that producing anger or despair?
Ultimately, resignation, but in a good sense, because in the same concept of whatever will be, there's a plan for this book too, and whatever it is, it's going to turn out that way. So I think I'm feeling a lot better about it these days.
Well, now the book is on Bookworm, which is, for many, a book, a form of salvation.
Well, this is absolutely... Absolutely. I think the timing is great and timing is right for it. And I'm really
well,
glad
I
to
feel
be here.
Very lucky because I want to be able to tell people about books before they've heard about them. The 1600 page book took me the time to clear to read it, the time to clear to get angry at it and say, I'm not reading this, the time to pick it up again and say, but I have to read another 50 pages, the time because most of those 50 pages in that case were blank, it took 5 minutes to read the next 50 pages. It was so full of a very wonderful, direct, intimate interaction with me that, and I carried it to so many places. And it's a heavy book, so it became an appendage to me. I took it as a book of a sort that I hadn't read in a very long time. Its daring, its willingness to just say, the book is about what happens in the next 50 pages. And then the next section will be about what happens in that 50 pages. Gradually, these will add up, but please don't ask me to know in advance how. Come with me, trust me that wherever I can add, I will. I'm not here to try and waste your time. I'm trying to see if, by wasting your time, I can restore your sense of time, your sense of space, your sense of consciousness, and give you a new view of what has become ignored in your life. If you're like all of us, you've become virtually a robot, virtually an appendage of the machine, of the computer, worse than in the industrial age. So please join me, Matthew McIntosh, and come back to life and learn a new mystery.
Amen.
Thank you so much. I've been talking with Matthew McIntosh, author of The Mystery Dot Doc. It's published by the publisher of so much of the great and classic avant-garde, Grove Press. Thank you, Matthew, for joining me.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Mystery Dot Doc at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez, whose place is taken today by our associate producer, Alan Howard. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.